Bit of an echo. Are you all right now? Testing, testing. Well, thank you very much for letting me come back again. That's very nice of you. Very nice indeed. My name is Christian, for those who don't know me. I am a maths teacher in Shrewsbury. There will be no maths questions today. You may be very pleased to hear. Don't worry about that. Some of you are looking nervous already. Don't worry, it's not happening. We're looking at the subject of trust today. Thought that would be something that would be good to do. And I'm going to take pretty much everything from Psalm 36. Interesting, the song that we just sang there, because it pretty much summed up everything I was going to say. So maybe you don't even need to listen to me. Hey, I might just go. It's good. Anyway, I'm going to start. Tom's already started the psalm. I'm going to do the first. I'm going to split it into three, and then we'll have a look at what's been talked about here in this one psalm, because it's a journey of trust, and I think there's a lot to be learned from this psalm. So it says the following: I have a message from God again concerning the sinfulness of the wicked. There is no fear of God before their eyes. In their own eyes they flatter themselves too much to detect or hate their sin. The words of their mouths are wicked and deceitful. They fail to act wisely or do good. Even on their beds they plot evil. They commit themselves to a sinful course and do not reject what is wrong. It's pleasant, isn't it? Nice start to the psalm. Most people would recognize that we live in a world which is very much like this, where people live in a code of revenge and fear and hatred and unfairness. I think it would be, you only have to look at the news at the moment to see all the stuff that's going on, dropping bombs and killing people and killing everything really that seems to be going on at the moment. That we live in that kind of world, and it's not just on a global scale. I mean, you need. Let me notice. I do like to walk around. I apologise for that. Is that where I'm clicking out? Just stay still. And you did that to me deliberately. This is also an individual level, not just on a global level, and because that's how a lot of the time we come across, and we come across with people who are always looking to get ahead of others through whatever cruel means that they can. And it's a world that presents to us a lot of troubles, isn't it? Yeah, would you say? Some of you are going, no, I bet everything's great. But for a lot of us, I think you'll find that there's trouble. They can affect our hearts. They can wound us, and they can cause hurts and fears on the inside. Walking through difficulties at the moment of any kind, or you have done, you know exactly what I mean. So troubles will come. Jesus promised that. I mean, everyone likes to focus on the nice, fluffy promises that Jesus gives, but Jesus actually promised you're going to have troubles. It's going to happen. You know, it's the world. And the thing is with troubles, the thing is with things that come against us, the thing is that with anything that we have to walk through in the world, it's how we respond to those things rather than are they going to happen. It's not a case of, oh, why have they happened? Why has this been allowed to happen? Why is this going on? It's going to happen. The point is, how do we respond? One of the most starkest warnings in the Bible, really, that Jesus mentions is this whole thing of response. And it's in Matthew 24, verse 12, which I think comes up next. It says this: because of the increase of wickedness, the love of most will grow cold. And that's quite horrible. That's quite horrible. It's basically saying, Jesus is saying, as wickedness increases in the world, it's going to be really hard to keep your heart loving. It's going to be really hard to keep your heart in the right place. It's going to be really hard for your heart to be good. Because evil and wickedness and sin affects our hearts and souls if we let it, and it's hard not to. They cause us to shut our hearts up. I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but the whole game really becomes you don't want your heart to get battered and bruised anymore. So you shut down. You go into a survival mindset just to make it through life. And that's a natural response. If you're getting hit again and again and again, your natural response is to just go into survival mode. And that is basically how things work. And that mindset stops us loving, it stops us trusting, it stops us enjoying life, it hinders our faith, because all we're doing is trying to get through. It affects the destiny of our lives. It affects the peace in that is in our hearts, because we're just shut down completely. And it's going on all the time. Cynicism is something which is really hard to stop yourself from going down, is it not? You find yourself getting cynical as you get older, or is it just me? We're getting loads of cold calls at the moment. All right, in the end, I've stopped answering the phone. But it's been the case of you've won a house. I don't care. We've got I can save you money on your energy. I'm not listening. Because it is. It's all. I don't even know how to get my number. It's your mum. Bang. I'm not listening anymore. Because it just keep on. I don't even trust anybody who's actually ringing me up. I don't know how to get my number, but they seem to do. And so I've just closed things down in my own heart. I have that. It's very easy to. That's what I'm trying to say. It's very easy to get cynical. I remember as a teenager. This happened quite a lot. I started to enter into, when I went to secondary school specifically, my friends, you get friends at teenage level, but there is this whole thing, especially with lads, I think, but I think it happens with everybody, where everyone's dragging everybody down. So it's a lot of banter that goes on, but a lot of time it comes through and people are dragging each other down and they're saying all sorts of nasty things. And I remember as a teenager specifically, just in the end, not liking it that much that I hedged myself around. I erected walls around my heart. That's probably the best way of describing it. And it was great, because every time I got a fresh insult, it didn't hurt anymore. Every time someone said something horrible to me, it didn't hurt. Every time someone came along and said something to me which was supposed to drag me down, it just bounced off. And it was fantastic. Apart from the fact that it stopped me trusting anybody, it stopped me loving anybody or letting love in. It stopped me enjoying life. It gave me this kind of weird kind of like out-of-body experience almost, because it didn't even feel like it was my own life anymore. And it's that trust really is the essence of this message, is the key to the quality of our relationship, to all of our relationships, especially with God. And if we're not trusting, then we don't really have much of a relationship going on. So I was basically just looking out for survival all the time. Not a particularly pleasant time of my life. So that's the first part, the first four verses of this psalm, all about what does that do? All about sin making a difference in a very, very negative way. And we're surrounded by it. We're absolutely surrounded by it. But then the psalm switches. We go on then to 5, 6, and 7. It says the following: Your mercy, O Lord, is in the heavens. Your faithfulness reaches to the clouds. Your righteousness is like the great mountains. Your judgments are a great deep, O Lord. You preserve man and beast. How precious is your loving kindness, O God. Therefore, the children of men put their trust under the shadow of your wings. So the psalm then shifts emphasis from man's wickedness all the way across to God's protection, to God's love, to God's faithfulness, to God's righteousness, to God's justice. Man hates, but God's love reaches to the heavens. Man lets us down, but God remains faithful. Man is sinful, but God is righteous. Man is deceitful, but God is always, always, always just and true, and in fact, it is impossible for him to lie. But it's verse 7 that I think is the most interesting of this. It says the following on verse 7: How priceless is your unfailing love, O God. People take refuge in the shadow of your wings. It says, as we focus on God's love, our hearts are completely empowered to trust in him. And that's almost probably the biggest thing I'm going to say today. If you want to stop listening for the rest of it, then that's fine. As long as you hear that bit there. As you focus on, see, whatever you focus on, you magnify in your life. All right? Whatever you choose to focus on, that's what you will make big in your life. So if you focus on all the problems and all the sin and all the rubbish and all the strife and struggle that there is, that's what becomes huge. And I'm not saying that those things aren't big, but we make them big by focusing on them. And the bigger they are, the more we focus on them, the bigger they become. But if we focus on God's love, then that's what becomes bigger and bigger and bigger in our lives. So we get to choose how we can respond based on how we focus, based on what we fix our eyes on. So it's our revelation of who God is, of his love for us, that causes our heart to naturally open up to him, to naturally trust in him. The more that we believe that he loves us, the more that we believe he cares for us, the more that we believe he has our best interests at heart, the more we can trust in him. You'd never trust somebody who you didn't think had your best interests, would you? Well, I wouldn't. You know, this is all these companies that are cold calling me, I don't trust them at all because they're trying to make money out of me. But if someone comes up to me and they've got naturally, and I genuinely believe they've got my best interests at heart, then you start to trust in those people. And the more we do that, the more we understand that that's who God is, that he's not a spiteful God, he's indifferent towards us, but he's got some proactive way of trying to reach into our lives and to improve and enhance and develop and give us our best life, then if we truly believe that, we have a revelation of that in our hearts, then we can actually start trusting in him. 1 Peter 2 verse 25 says this: "For you are all like sheep going astray, but now you have returned to the shepherd and overseer of your souls." And I think that's wonderful. He's known in Psalm 23 as the good shepherd. The Lord is known as a shepherd, and John 10 is known as a good shepherd. The overseer of your soul, somebody who's looking after, taking care of your souls, is what it says in 1 Peter 2. And this is what he's saying in this, that it's his desire to care for our souls, to carry our burdens. That's one of the major things that I got out of this, that he wants to banish our fears. He wants to heal the hurts in our hearts. And some of us may well have been carrying a few hurts for a while now. But it is really, really important that whatever we go through, if you put this picture up, I found this picture. This is a picture of what a shepherd was doing back in the day, all right, in Israel. This was when it was like, the Lord is your shepherd. I like this. I always got to the bit where he said, the good shepherd, like, the Lord is my shepherd. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. I was like, my word, I don't understand that. It's like they give you a clout around the head. What's all that about? That's all I understand about the rod and the staff. That's why it should be comforting you. Look, bears. You don't want bears attacking you, do you? So there's the shepherd, there's the sheep, and there's a bit of protection going on for you. That's God. That's what he does. That's God protecting our souls. That's God. As we go through whatever we go through, that's what he does. He keeps away the things that we should be fearful of. And naturally, you come across a bear, you know, throw that one in. But as far as it goes, you know, we have got somebody where it comes into context with our souls that he's looking after them. He's keeping these things at bay. And we need to stay close to him, because the closer we are to him, the more peace we can have, the more he's protecting us. So whatever we go through, we can trust in him. Whatever we go through, we can give things over to him. Really, really important that we understand that this is a journey. It's not a one-off decision. If you sat there going, well, I've given Jesus my heart already, I've given Jesus my soul now, I did that like 50-odd years ago now, and that's it, it's all sorted. It's not. It's a constant journey. It's a daily decision. We need to keep going back to a place where we let him more and more and more into the vulnerable areas of our souls. More and more into the vulnerable areas of our hearts. Because the more we do, the better it is for us. The safer we are than behind our own walls that we can easily put up to keep us safe. So we have to go through evil. We have to go through trouble. We don't have to let our hearts be scared when we do. We will go through health issues, financial issues, family issues, relationship issues. Dear me, I could go on with that list for a long, long time, and I'm sure you can add to it. We will go through those things, but what Jesus promises in our hearts all the way through that stuff, all the way through those things, that they don't need to be dragging us down. A while back, I was waking. Do you ever wake up in the middle of the night and can't get back to sleep? Right, or it's just me. Yeah, so I wake up, and like then your mind's wired about something, because it's like, man, I'm thinking about this now, and it's going to be sorted out. It's going to be sorted out now, and I'll do this, and I'll do that. Anyway, a few months ago, I was awake at, I don't know, 3:30 in the morning, and my brain's doing this, and I'm trying to get all of these things sorted out, and I've got to do this, and that's going to affect the family if I don't get that sorted out, and I need to get that sorted out. And there was a long list of things that were in my head, and I couldn't sleep because I was thinking this has to be all sorted. Now, weirdly, that was the start. That list still existed at 10 o'clock at night when I could have done something about it, probably. But this is after 3 in the morning, and now it's really on my head, and I can't do anything about it. I mean, it's stuff that actually I couldn't have changed at that point. And what I, in the end, realized was that I needed to just trust God with everything that was there. So I pictured Jesus in front of me, and I just gave him every single one of these issues, every single one of the problems, every single one of the things that I was struggling with at that time. I was literally, I could just see myself giving every one over to him, trusting him with them, that whatever happens, he will look after me and my family. Whatever happens, I can trust him with the future. Whatever happens, I can trust him with my soul, that he's going to look after it. He's going to make sure that everything is going to be sorted. It was like he was saying, I'll look after this. This is my concern now, not yours. And then I had a good night's sleep, which is nice, isn't it? There you go. I've just solved some insomnia there for him. But it's something to do. It's something to be aware of. It is something that where Jesus is literally saying to every single one of us, I don't want you to carry the weight that you're carrying. I don't want you to be doing that. I want to carry this weight for you because that's something that you're not supposed to be carrying right now. I want you to be focused on just your relationship with Jesus and enjoying your relationship with me and with others. I want you to have life in all its fullness, not to be carrying the weight of the world on your shoulders all the single time, every single minute of the day. And it's about giving the stuff that you've got over to him, giving the heaviness of heart over to him, bit by bit. And you may be there, you may be sat here right now going, well, I can't trust God. I can't do this. You may have been wounded in the past, you may be fearful of losing control of your heart or control of the things that are going on. But let me say this, wherever you are, whether you're a Christian, whether you're not a Christian, whether you've been a Christian forever, it doesn't matter. Jesus will meet us exactly where. Wherever we are, spiritually, emotionally, physically, it doesn't matter. Jesus meets us exactly where we are. We don't have to get to a certain place where we can go, and now you can do it. He will meet you where you are right now. He will meet you in the place that you find yourself in, because that's the whole point of grace. Grace stretches out and meets us as we are as a person. He does not insist that we become perfect before we're allowed to enjoy this newness of life. In fact, he wants us to be real and open and honest about who we actually are and say, look, I feel like this and I'm a mess right now with this. Would you take it off me? And that is actually where you'll meet God the most powerful, when you're open with him and when you're honest with him. You simply let him know how we feel. His perfect love casts out all fear. The choice will always remain. Who do we trust the most with our heart? Is it going to be ourselves behind our walls? Or is it going to be the shepherd who is the wisest, most powerful being in the universe? There's an eternity of experience in guiding and caring. And if we choose God, his grace will work in us the desire and the power to action this choice. And that's important. So what happens after that? Do you know the whole gospel works through this? This is really nice. Sin, and then we can give our hearts over to Jesus and say, I don't want to live in this sinful, murky thing all the more. Thank you, Jesus, for everything you've done for me. Look at this, though. Psalm 36, verse 8. We're going to finish on this. It's brilliant, this. Absolutely brilliant. I love this verse. They feast on the abundance of your house. This is people now. They've gone and they've trusted God. They've seen his love. They've trusted God. This is what comes next. They feast on the abundance of your house. You give them drink from your river of pleasures. For with you is the fountain of life. In your light we see life. Abundantly satisfied. Does that sound all right? Yeah? And drink from your river of pleasures. See, pleasures, a lot of the time, pleasures in the Bible, that must be sinful. Well, apparently not. Look, there we are. God's going to give you rivers of pleasure, which is pretty good. God calls us for our souls to delight and be satisfied in relationship with him. Relationship with God's got some, you know, a lot of people say, oh, you should have a relationship with God, and it's got this real, like, low standard with a lot of people because it's below a whole lot of other things that they think they'd like. Look at what it's saying. Look at what the word is actually saying. This is the truth of what's going on here. Satisfied. This is God's heart. If you could just grab God's heart, he is constantly offering, more than that, he's constantly beckoning us eagerly and passionately, aching for us to drink from his river of pleasure. That's his heart. Right now, so I did say, he really wants to get rid of the weight of your heart, the weight that's weighing you down. Yep, absolutely. And then beyond that, he wants you then to be drinking from his river. He wants you to enjoy yourself. He wants you to enjoy completely relationship with him. Does that make sense? You're, oh, yes. Yes, of course it makes sense. Does that make sense? Are you with me on this? This is what he wants. This is God. The God is not this passive kind of like, yeah, whatever. You know, this is life, and you're just going to put up with it. And, you know, well, when he gets to heaven, it'll be a lot better. God wants you today to drink from his river of pleasures. He wants you to have the most delighted and delightful, enjoyable experience with him today. All right, that's before you get to heaven. This is what he's saying. And so this river is so full of life, so full of intense riches and joy, that every single part of our innermost being will soar with the purest of pleasures. Right? You can believe me if you want, it's up to you. It's all there if you don't. But this is really important. The world offers a poor imitation of this. A very poor imitation. And then it takes away again just as quickly. Yeah? Sin offers this, like, yeah, you can have this most amazing, amazing pleasure. And then the minute you taste of it, it dies. It fades almost as quickly as it came. But with God, it lasts. Everlasting satisfaction. Abundantly satisfied forever and ever and ever. Not just when you've gone to heaven. You can have it now and you can keep on doing it and keep on having it. But basically, with Jesus, we can find a true pleasure that goes on for eternity. And it's all wrapped up, all of it is wrapped up in seeking him, allowing him to pour that river deep into us and experience an ever-growing deepness in our heart knowledge of God. That we let God speak into our hearts, that we let him fill us and strengthen us and renew us and feed us and cleanse us and revive us and guide us and fill us with life. That we let him pour his spirit deep into us and allow him to speak into our soul. And the more I've done this, the more I've gone down this journey of trusting him with everything, of trusting him with my spirit, of trusting him with my emotions and the things that are weighing me down, and the more I believe that he's close to me and he wants this for me, the more aware of God's presence I've become throughout every single day, the more aware of his spirit with me I've become. You can, you know, believe it if you want. It's completely up to you. I could be lying, of course, but I'm not. This is the reality of it. The more aware of him with me I've become, because this is who he is. This is what he wants. We're given a choice. We can have a religion where we keep Jesus at a distance, a lifeless religion where you can go, all right, then Jesus is over here, and I'm going to have nothing to do with him, but, you know, I'll go to church on a Sunday and I'll look good. Or you can have his river of pleasures. That's your choice. Yeah? I know what I'm going for. I don't want a lifeless religion. I don't want to show up to church on a Sunday and go, yeah, I'm here, I'm still a Christian, yeah, it's great. It's rubbish. I want to smile. I want to enjoy it, yeah? And that's what he's offering. He's offering that, and he offers it every single day of our lives, every single moment. You may have been a Christian for a while. You may not be a Christian at all and have never even heard the fact that it's actually enjoyable. That's good, isn't it? Yeah, it can be enjoyable. So a lot of people are like, I don't believe it's enjoyable in the slightest. It is. All right, so get your head around that if you dare it. So, just to summarize very briefly, we are living in an evil world. It is horrible and hurting at times. It can lead us through the most horrible, horrible things which bruise us. But let us remember that Jesus offers to heal us. Let us remember that he's the shepherd of our souls and he wants to carry us through the things that we go through. That we don't have to live a life of survival where we close down. That we can go through and he will be the person that carries our hurts and our fears. We can trust them all over to him, that he will heal us from the inside out. And we can live a life of peace and trust and fullness. As we learn to trust him, we embark on this rich and vibrant relationship with God, which is very, very, very rewarding. As we sing this final song, I want us to do this. Are you going to do a final song? What are we doing? Light of the world. Bit of light of the world. As we sing this final song, can we make it a declaration to Jesus that we're trusting him with your whole heart and with your whole soul? This whole thing here has got the gospel working all the way through it. As I said, Jesus was aching for us to have relationship with him. He died on a cross so our sins could be forgiven. He died on a cross so that we could come to know him. And that was not supposed to be a dull and boring relationship. That was supposed to be a relationship that we could enjoy and have life in all its fullness. So, I'll let you go. I'll stop now at this point. And let God have your soul.